From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Robin Hilton. There's a pretty great new record by the Black Keys. It's coming out May 13th, and it's called Turn Blue. Patrick Carney is the drummer. Dan Auerbach's the guitarist. And he's also the singer, of course. They've always done a lot as a duo, and on this record, even more so. They stretch their bluesy sound to pop places they've never quite been before. So we wanted to talk to them about Turn Blue and how they approached this, their eighth album. Turn Blue began January 2013, snowed in at a studio in Ann Arbor. Later, they met with Brian Burton in Los Angeles. I'm sure you know Brian Burton. His own projects are Broken Bells and Gnarls Barkley. He's also a busy producer for Gorillaz, Beck, and including the Black Keys. This friendship goes back to 2008 with the Black Keys album Attack and Release, and then again in 2011 for El Camino. Robin and I listened to the new Black Keys album, getting ready for our talk with Pat and Dan. For this interview, we're in Washington, D.C. They're in Nashville, Tennessee. And one of the songs you'll hear a bit of soon reminded me of Neil Young's Down by the River. And as we waited and waited for Pat and Dan, we played five versions of Down by the River until they finally arrived.
Hey, guys.
Hey, yes.
Dan and Patrick.
Awesome.
Hold on a second.
We're busy listening anyway. I'm going to crank this up a little bit. You guys get ready. You get comfy.
All right, cool.
Find the comfortable spot.
Okay.
Well, you can all sing it together.
Be on my side and be on your side.
Which one was
baby.
That?
Baby.
That was Pat.
All right.
That was not me.
All right.
Well, mine will go. Mine Here would go. Be Here much go. Worse than that.
You know, it's your fault I'm listening to this song, which is so good. I am so thankful.
Did you hear Jimmy Buffett's version from his On the Beach album?
You're trying to rain on my parade, aren't you?
I know it doesn't exist, but I'm picturing it happening right now.
How are you guys?
I didn't mean to be such like a land shark.
Oh, I'm just going to do this.
Oh, sorry.
Dan Auerbach, Patrick Carney, thanks for joining us. Black Keys.
So that's Robin. I'm Bob. Hang on one second. We have only one cable that goes from one computer to another. Hang on.
Okay, we're public broadcasting. We've got a grant request in to buy a new mini-to-mini
cable, yeah.
But
so now Robin's plugging his computer in. Which
kickstart it, man.
Yeah. Kickstart. We need a new cable.
We need a new cable.
Amount requested $1.59.
I'd love to make that video.
32 cents raised towards goal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been enjoying the record. Nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you have fun?
Yeah. We worked in, two different cities and took our time. It's the first time we've really ever kind of forced ourselves to slow down a little bit and spread out the sessions.
I want to play the top of the first song. If I said to you when I first put this on that I didn't think this sounded like a Black Keys record, would you be insulted or would you be complimented?
Well, I don't know what you're playing. That's not our new record.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Be on my side, I'll be on your side.
Our first song's called Macarena. You haven't gotten that version yet?
Macarena. Yeah.
Is
no.
that with a K?
This is...
Anyway, it's beautiful sound.
I'll tell you what, when I first heard this song, the bells kicked in. I didn't know Brian Burton produced this record. I thought, this sounds like a Brian Burton record. And that's a compliment. It's a compliment. I love that guy's work. Everything he touches is gold.
Except for most music he works on.
Apart from that.
You guys happen to help him out a little bit. Give him a little bit of credit.
Brian's the best. We love working with Brian. When we go into the studio with him, we basically kind of become like a three-piece band, writing together and producing together. And Brian's the only person on the planet that can walk into that position with us, and it's completely okay.
How would you describe a Brian Burton produced record? I think there's always such a distinctive vibe to his sound.
Well, everybody he works with in a different way. When he works with us, like I said, he's like joining the band and It's not like a traditional producer role at all. But so, when he works with James, I think it's a similar thing. Only I'm sure they have a different dynamic when it comes to making the music. And when he works with CeeLo, you know, I think he has more of a traditional producer role, although he's writing there as well.
Let's start with this song that we're playing now, which is the opening track to the record. What was that song like when you walked in the studio in Los Angeles and started working with him?
We didn't have any songs when we went into the studio, so we would start every day fresh with a blank canvas there. And we would just, we'd, you know, kind of sit around, listen to music, talk, hang out, and then we would just get on the instruments and try stuff and see what would happen. I can't even remember how that one started. Was it with the acoustic?
I wrote the whole thing. Dan and Brian came in and like, oh, it's done. I actually had sang it.
Here's what you guys do.
It was pretty crazy. That's how, about most of all of our music works. I do it all.
Patrick like, does, yeah.
Actually, that song started with Dan and Brian both playing acoustic guitar. And then Dan and I going in the room. And I don't know if we just kind of jammed.
I want to talk to Dan about this.
Epic solo here that kicks in, I think it lasts the last couple minutes of the song here. Were they all waving at you saying, pull out, pull out?
Never stop going in.
Yeah.
How is that happening right now? Brian on the other side, Patrick on the other side of the glass. The drums recorded already. Where are we at when we're doing
you
this?
Know that, you know that video for Eddie Murphy's song? What's that song called? She likes to party. What's that song?
My girl wants to party all the time.
In that video, Rick James is behind the glass raising his hands, encouraging the performance. Brian and I were like Rick James that moment.
Keep going.
And Dan, what were you feeling there?
Oh God, you know, I'd never done that before. Uh-huh. So I was like, I would stop every few seconds and be like, are you sure I should be doing this? This feels a little like self-indulgent. Are you sure? And they're like, go.
Awesome.
And I'm like, oh, I was like, all right.
Hang on one second.
You know,
let's hear it.
Nice post, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. I do this for a living. So you were going to say, I'm sorry.
You know, I'd never done something like that on record, even though, I mean, I love, you know, I grew up listening to Derek and the Dominoes and the Allman Brothers and stuff like that.
Pink
you
Floyd?
Know, so not so much Pink Floyd, but...
I hear that, though. Do you hear that at all, in the tone of the guitar?
I hear it.
I listen to the Grateful Dead a lot. I used to, you know, it's the first rock show I ever went to was the Grateful Dead Ridgefield Coliseum with my dad.
Wow.
I was like 12 or something.
Wow.
But, you know, I grew up listening to that kind of music. I love long guitar solos and spacey jams, but Pat and I just never do that. So it was fun. It was fun being able to do that for the first time.
I'm going to play another bit of music, and you're going to, one of you will make something up about this. Here we go. You guys do know what this is.
Yeah.
I'll bring it under, you tell me.
Well, yeah, that's the song we sampled for, that's the Nico Fidenko song we sampled for the song Year in Review, which is a sample that Brian had cut like years ago. You know, he has this computer that's like, I don't know, some 10-year-old like Dell computer.
Right.
The software hasn't been updated. He doesn't want to change it since anything. You know, it's the same
works.
As it wasn't. Yeah, it's the same as it was in 2003. It's not allowed to be on the internet. You know, and it's the computer I think he did the Gray album on.
Oh wow!
But one day we went into the studio and we had like in the live room we had a separate little lounge set up. By lounge, I mean a piece of crap couch and like some blown out speakers and that computer. But we would kind of get away from like the engineers when we wanted to kind of like regroup and figure out what we wanted to work on for the day. We would go in there. And Brian just started going through a stockpile of samples that he had. And we had never used them before or really heard much of them. So...
Wait, you never used samples before? You never used any of his stuff?
We'd never used a sample before, right. But uh-huh. We never really heard it, this amazing kind of archive he has of things he's cut over the years to use eventually. So he suggested that we write something to that song, and it became the first song we've ever written to and used a sample in, you know?
Let's play the what came out of it. This is from a film called La Ragazzina. No, that's not right.
This cut Sandra was from that.
Hey, it sounds right to me. I don't know. It's Italian. I know that.
Ragazzina. There you
go. You don't want to hear my Italian accent. It sounds like kind of like Jamaican. Every accent I do sounds like a Jamaican accent.
We're going to get to that at the end of the interview. Yeah. I swear we're going to pull
that out. If you could do the rest
of
the interview in that would be really super helpful. Fantastic.
All right, thanks. Here you go. This is Year in Review, the fifth cut from the new album, Turn Blue. So how does that song take shape? You have this sample, you hear it, you're sitting in a beautiful lounge with crystal glass and...
with table service.
What happens? How does it... Tell me how that happened.
I mean, the way it always happens is we go into the studio, we go into the live room, and I'll sit behind the drums, and Dan will pick up a guitar or bass, and Brian will come in, and maybe he'll sit down at the piano, or maybe he'll bring a guitar in, and we just... figure out a starting place, and it's just always building from there. If we can get something started and get it moving in a direction where it's got some weight to it, then it's not hard to figure out where to go from there. It sometimes can take a couple days to finish a song, but usually it happens pretty quickly.
I always think of you as almost everything you do as a live band, whether I'm deluding myself or not. I'm going to assume that most of the stuff you do studio-wise is, for the most part, relatively live, but... I guess
a lot of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, there'll be times where we'll write something live and then we'll reverse engineer it, you know? Like we'll go back and maybe cut the drums separately or cut the bass separately. You know, and we're not afraid to work at any method, you know? I think the more we change it up record to record and kind of like this record is, we probably use like 6 or 7 different ways of cutting a song, and it keeps it interesting, you know? And I think the hard part is to kind of connect them so that you can't tell how the record was made. It just seems consistent. And that's something that I think we're figuring out, you know, how to do it.
I'm always curious to know how lyrics come about in a song when the idea is given to you or sparked by somebody else. You know, he comes to you with this sample. It's the seed of an idea, and how the lyrics sort of grow out of that. Is it sort of stream of consciousness? And at the end you realize, I see what this song is about.
When we wrote songs on this record, we came up with the vocal melodies first. You know, I would just sort of improvise and work with Brian on just coming up with a nice melody that kind of fit the mood of the music, and then write lyrics to that set melody. So it's almost like writing a song in reverse, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very different, but it's, you know, I started doing it with Brian on El Camino. And it was fun. It was like it's sort of like a different kind of challenge, because you basically, by writing that vocal melody, you have a template, and then all of your lyrics have to fit in that template. It's strange, but it's still fun.
It makes for words that may not have always the deepest meaning, but because the first thing you're aiming for is that it all fits, right?
Well, sometimes, I mean, you know, you can just put in gobbledygook lyrics that don't mean anything, and right. God, some of those Motown songs, vocal melodies are so catchy. And they're just not singing about anything in particular. You know, baby love, my baby love.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sure. As a music lover, are you more drawn to melody than lyrics? Is that the first thing you go to when you're listening?
No, I'm drawn to both, you know? Yeah. I think that there are certain people who can turn a phrase, and I think it's amazing, somebody like John Prine or Tom Waits or something like that. But there are those songs, like those Motown songs, that just blow me away and get stuck in my head. And really, you know, they don't have a very deep meaning. They're just such catchy songs, you know?
Play Fever a minute.
Show two more songs named Fever. I don't have it, Bob.
Here you go. You know, when Neil Young wrote Down by the River, he had 103 fever. I just thought I'd throw that factoid in there while I'm killing time.
I did not know that.
Well, this doesn't have quite the Motown beat, but the tambourine works.
Yeah, tambourine.
When I was a kid, it was during Motown craze, and there were songs that you could just, like, summertime swimming pool, like, just stomp your feet to the jukebox and stuff. This song could have been on that jukebox. It really has that. It has such a great feel to it. It just has a feel that you just want to live with the song. The song will play in your head.
The song will move in with you, too. We can arrange it. $1.29.
I was going to say rented, yeah.
No kitchen privileges, though.
Yeah, no kitchen privileges.
And utilities not included.
It will not do chores, either.
A song like that, is that a guitar-based tune?
That one started with that melody. Do, 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 do. And it was Pat and I in Benton Harbor on our own, and we recorded that song. And it came about pretty quickly. It had that melody in my mind and then worked out what the chords were. And then we kept it really simple. We kept the bass and the drums simple and dancey and tried to keep it upbeat, sort of, you know, like Motown, like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And
that's got to be Brian then, I'm guessing, no, on that keyboard?
No. We recorded this without Brian.
Right. We did the end of the song. Uh-huh. It breaks down. Uh-huh.
The part that doesn't sound like Brian.
Yeah. The part that doesn't sound like Brian, we did with Brian.
It was only that keyboard sound that felt like him. But
yeah, no, that's a Farfisa.
Yeah. He likes those things.
Well, it's
Farfisa.
Italian.
Right.
I started realizing about Brian. He
likes everything Italian.
Yeah. Olive Garden. The basic cheese organ sound.
Everyone
my
came
dad
below.
My dad thinks the organ sounds like that song, Palisades Park.
Totally, Freddie Mercury. I'm not Freddie. Yeah. Freddie Cannon. How do you know that song? That's crazy.
It was actually a regional hit in Cleveland. When we were growing up, the oldie stations still adhered to like the Billboard charts, the local charts from.
Yeah, so, Magic 105.7 always played that song.
Yeah, so there's hits that were like big in Cleveland and few other places, and we kind of grew up listening to some, I guess, pretty weird oldies.
You know, when you come to Washington, D.C., if you went ahead and played Freddie Cannon's Palisades Park, you'd make one guy pretty happy.
Yeah?
This one's for you, Bobby B.
I feel like in a ever since I was a little kid, this song just freaked me out. Like, it just seems like something like a world-class creep would be listening to when something really bad happened in a movie, you know? It's like Blue Velvet type thing, but like on the other edge of the spectrum. But it's like weird, that circus organ.
I ate ice cream to this and played baseball, so I had a different image of this.
Exactly. Dan and I grew up off a street called Palisades in Akron.
Oh. But Palisades Park, the real one, was in Jersey.
It was in Jersey, yeah.
I want to play the top of Waiting on Words. Is that cool?
Yeah.
So I heard this, and I started looking through the liner notes to see who you got to sing this with you. Is that Dan?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
That's me.
Helium or some other physical act, I don't know.
It's just, it's not just that it's a, it's not that you're just hitting that range, it's just so, such a pure sound, too. It doesn't sound like you're a falsetto, you know?
You know, I've always been able to sing falsetto really easily, and when I started playing guitar, it was because my family played bluegrass, and I would always take the high harmonies, and it was always really easy for me, and I just never, I never really had the confidence to do it.
Patrick, is he really good at it?
You should hear his natural speaking voice, is all I gotta say.
I'm sorry, I started. Dan, are you using your radio voice for this interview?
Dan has an octave pedal on his microphone.
Pitch shifter.
Well, I was impressed.
I have an octave up. My natural voice is... It's real death metal, actually.
Well, you found your sweet spot then. I think I'd like to hear more of that.
But Dan usually does three vocal tracks, so he does a high or two high ones and a normal one. Really, right, don't you? Most the last two records. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we sort of layer in a high vocal to add some weight, maybe to a chorus or something. But yeah, I think the first time I ever sang on a record with falsetto was on Brothers. Mm-hmm. On the very first track.
Yeah.
Did you come into the studio knowing that you wanted to hit that range with Waiting on Words, or is that something that you've...
No, I just came up with a little guitar riff and started making up a melody and singing, and that just happened. And it was just there. It was in the falsetto range where I was playing on the guitar, and we just kept it there.
Making records for a long time, and you know, in the basement starting that way, and now you have, you know, you span this in many different studios. Do you miss the basement, or is there anything about that that you don't get anymore?
I mean, the basement was fun, but you know, at the same time, like, we were never like able to get things to sound how we were hearing them in our heads, you know. And a lot of it was like we didn't really know what we were doing, but the other part was that we didn't have like the right equipment, you know, to really be able to do it. I think it might be easier to do it now with the technology that's around now versus when we started.
You mean having a home studio now, a basement studio now, would be more versatile than it would have been in the days you started. But it's so great when a band just keeps growing and surprising, and that's what I was saying at the beginning when I asked you. If I told you I didn't think it sounded like a Black Keys album, would you be insulted or complimented? And for me, it's my backhanded way of paying you a compliment.
You know, it's actually a very good record.
How do you do it, guys?
So I think, like, we were doing an interview, or maybe I was just doing an interview on my own. I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I don't remember what's going on, but I know that...
With your stuffed animals and...
Yeah. I was talking to myself in the shower. I think it was a German journalist who was... But he said that the record had very little in common with the first album, and I just was kind of in a bad mood, and I just wanted to prove him wrong. But then I went through the first album with him sitting there, and I realized that, like, okay, the last song, Gotta Get Away, there's at least two songs on the first record that are coming from the same exact spot, like Yearning, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then the whole last half of, like, Weight of Love, it's much more competent, but it's coming from a similar spot as, like, the last song on The Big Come Up, which is called 240 Years Before Your Time, which is just an instrumental, but it's just like kind of a spacey, rambling, psychedelic thing. And then I listened to the song The Breaks, which seems like it's directly related to the song In Time. And I could go through the whole record and I could like make comparisons.
And there's a sample before
I was like, you know, it's been 12 years and like this song was made in the basement. Dan and I didn't know what we were doing, and we were cramming in 4 hours on this little digital 16 track before we both had to go pay our bills. Like, even though our bills were minimal, we were just working, putting a lot of time into making this record for this record label that had no money to give us and no guarantee that the record would ever get heard by anybody. And if you kind of just like fast forward 12 years, we're on a major label. People are going to hear it. We know that. We have a bigger budget and all that. But we've just been doing it longer and we're still trying to go for the same stuff. Obviously, we're pushing ourselves to like explore the territory more thoroughly, and we've gotten better. But I think really when it comes down to it, like, sure, this record sounds a lot different than El Camino, but in the grand scheme of things, from what we've done, it is perfectly at home, I think.
I think you're right. Thanks for this wonderful psychedelic pop experience.
Thanks so much.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking about the conversation there, not the record. I just be clear about that.
That's what I was talking about, yeah, too.
Yeah. Go good.
Me too.
Cheers, everybody. See you when you come to Washington, maybe.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Be well. Patrick Carney, Dan Auerbach, The Black Keys. Their new record, Turn Blue, comes out May 13th. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music, along with Robin Hilton. It's All Songs Considered. La-